Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share three of my favorite responses to HBO's documentary, Weight of the Nation. First up, a response by Lindy West, published on Jezebel, about being mean to fat people. Following that, with a piece from Fat Body Politics on fear-mongering for the nation. And closing it out with a fantastic piece by Deb Bergarg about stereo management skills for HBO viewers. I hope you enjoyed this special episode. In the spotlight today is a piece from Jezebel. This piece was written by Lindy West and published on May 9th, 2012. The piece is titled, Being Mean to Fat People is Pointless, a good old-fashioned plea for civility. Quote, obesity will crush the United States into oblivion. That's the final line of the trailer for HBO's upcoming Fatpocalypse documentary, Weight of the Nation, which, as far as I can tell, was directed by Roland Emmerich and ends with Will Smith blowing up the fat people mothership with a nuclear warhead. That's right, you guys. The fat people are coming to crush the entire nation into oblivion. This is why we can't have nice nations. New numbers came out this week at the sticky sausage hands of the dangerously obese. Kind of. By 2030, the study predicts, 42% of American adults will fit the clinical definition of obesity, and the result of that will be costs. Cue bottomless hand-wringing about choices and self-control and eat less, exercise more. The fat people must be stopped. If we don't do anything, this is really going to hinder any efforts to contain future healthcare costs. Justin G. Trogdon, an economist and one of the authors of the projection, told experts Monday at the start of the two-day Weight of the Nation conference in Washington. Now, here's the thing. Maybe obesity is a gruesome scourge that's going to literally sink the United States, like a new-timey lost city of Fatlantis. Whatevs, suckas, fat is buoyant. But that's actually not what this post is about. I do not want to talk about whether or not BMIs are bullshit or whether or not the obesity epidemic, panic, actually leveled off more than a decade ago, or the way that pretty much everyone erroneously conflates size with health. I'm not going to sit here and try to convince the internet that real-world weight loss is infinitely more complicated and painful than calories in, calories out. I want to put all that contentious shit in a jar right now and put a cloth over the jar so the contentious shit just goes to sleep like some idiot parrot. And just talk about the way we talk about fat people. Fat people in America are reduced to nothing but fatness. A fat person has a health problem of any kind, it's because they're fat. A fat person is single, well, duh, fat, they deserve it. A fat person is poor, well, that's not surprising. Obviously, they have bad judgment, no income control, because why would a smart person choose to be fat? If a fat person goes to a restaurant and sits on a broken chair, and the chair collapses under them, it's because they're fat. But if a thin person sits on the same broken chair and the chair collapses under them, it's because they sat on a broken chair. And that kind of reductive, simplistic thinking makes it incredibly easy to rest a whole nation's problems on the shoulders of the obese. I know this is a terribly uncool, bleeding heart thing to say, but language like crush the United States into oblivion hurts people. It sets up fat people, in case you forgot, fat people are people, as not just the adversaries of our own health or some lady's airplane elbow room or your boner, the usual crimes, but as the future downfall of humanity itself. The assumption that you have a right to legislate another person's body for their own good or for the children or even because they're gross is its own kind of crazy. But to inflate that assumption to apocalyptic proportions, railing against the nation obliterating medical bills of nebulous future straw fatties is fucking bonkers. Actively pushing the idea that fat people, via their choices or lack of willpower or whatever it is you've decided to turn their body into a shape you don't like, are ruining the country just makes the country a worse place for fat people to live, which isn't going to make fat people any less fat. It only makes them more miserable and you more of a dick. The way that our country treats human bodies, fat and thin and in between, is barbaric. And if any of you are gearing up to huff and puff, pretend not to know what I'm talking about, spare me. Just go read the comments on literally any blog post that mentions the word fat. We substitute shame and bullying for the kind of systematic infrastructure changes that might actually improve people's health. Then shake our heads in judgy dismay when our lazy self-serving shortcut doesn't fix anything. We frame people's bodies as physical manifestation of their supposed moral failings, just so that we can congratulate ourselves on not being them. We publicly humiliate and dehumanize children to prop up the multi-billion dollar weight loss industry. And that we tell fat people that they're the villains. Like, okay, air travel sucks. I get it. You're mad because you spent $300 to sit inside a hurtling sky dildo and breathe other people's recycling farts. And on top of that, you have to have a fat person's fat elbow a little bit in your area for a few hours. I am so very sorry. But you know what? I'm on team fat person's elbow no matter what. And not just because I'm a fat person with elbows. Because the pain and degradation that's built into that fat person's life lasts a lot longer than your 8-hour flight. If I was about to get on a long international flight and the stewardess was like, FYI, ma'am, if you publicly humiliate this bearded lady, we'll give you a free vodka all the way to Heathrow, I would totally want the free vodka. But I obviously wouldn't do it because my conscience is more important than temporary comforts. Also, then, I would call the FAA because that is some hella fucked up Carnival airline. Here's my point. People right now are actively campaigning against kindness and treating it like a legitimate and productive political stance. But that's insane. Even if shaming and hurting people was the solution to the obesity problem, which it isn't, it still wouldn't be worth it to me because humanity is more important. Maybe being kind to fat people, and really, I mean all people, isn't a perfect system. Maybe you're going to be uncomfortable on a plane once in a while, and it's possible that some fat weirdo is going to, oh, I don't know, game the system and get hella free open heart surgeries on Uncle Sam's dime or whatever stupid con you think we're running in the name of cake. But being a compassionate human being, I can absorb that margin of error, and I am proud to do so. Whether or not you believe that fat people actually cost our nation money, the real problem with this whole shame industrial complex is that it doesn't fucking work. Not only does it hurt people, it's embarrassingly ineffective. A cruel hobby, not a political act. Everyone on Earth who is concerned about this issue, whether you're a person who thinks that fatness is irrelevant, or someone who's bullied because of your body, or a concerned citizen who genuinely wants to improve the health of our nation, should be on the same side here. Be fucking nice. Campaign for better PE programs and healthier school lunches. Work to overhaul our country's horrific food production system. Seek logical solutions for how to cope with the physically larger populace. Because believe me, Americans aren't going to miraculously start getting smaller once you yell at us enough. Shame is stagnation. It won't fix anything. Bullying is not activism. Hurting is not helping. Cut it out. End quote. Spotlight today is a piece entitled Fear Mongering for the Nation. It was published on May 17, 2012 on the blog Fat Body Politics. Quote, the last two nights I watched the new HBO documentary The Weight of the Nation and was live tweeting with the hashtag WOTN. While the producers seemed to try and make the film appear to be compassionate towards the plight of fat people, the pre-apocalyptic language and fear-mongering used by many of the people interviewed, as well as the lack of a well-rounded argument that looked at both sides of the issue, made this documentary a fat hate fest. In the 4 hours of documentary, only one mention of a fat person being able to be metabolically healthy was mentioned. At no point was there ever discussion on the failure rate of weight-based health initiatives, 95% in the first 1 to 2 years, or that those who succeed by 5 years only manage to keep 10% of their body weight off. At no point was there any mention that a lifetime of weight loss attempts leads to weight cycling and weight gain, as well as other health complications. There was huge emphasis on the rise in type 2 diabetes in children, but no mention that due to the escalation in fat phobia and dieting behavior, children are more likely to have an eating disorder. Misuse of BMI charts. The film starts with the history of BMI charts. Interestingly enough, they use modern-day BMI chart numbers, with no mention of the change that occurred in the late 90s that made millions of people overweight and obese overnight. There is no mention of reality that BMI charts were never supposed to be used as a measure of health or for large populations as a whole. 2. What about the children? Part 3 of the series is completely dedicated to the prevalence of type 2 diabetes in children. No mention that the CDC does not have statistics on how many children have the disease because it is so rare. There is also commentary that now that the epidemic has started in children, it is easier to take seriously than when it was only adults or people in less valued groups. That comment summed up the tone for the rest of the films, showing how we will help people like children who are not thought of as having their own autonomy, while simultaneously deeming the lives of adults or less valued group as insignificant. 3. False and unscientific presentations. The most egregious clips from part 1 is when they are examining the 3 different hearts at Northwestern University School of Medicine. They show a heart of a normal weight 26-year-old woman and compare it to not only a 50-year-old man who weighed 500 pounds, but also to a fat 71-year-old heart. At no point was there any mention of the significant difference between the hearts due to aging, only mentioning the difference in body size. Aside from the fact that this is completely unscientific, it is a perfect example of the fact that a viewer will see this clip and not think about the information that is being left out. After viewing this clip myself, I saw numerous tweets about how they couldn't believe the difference in the hearts, everyone attributing the difference to body size, but not age. They were truly interested in presenting an unbiased scientific opinion. Hearts from bodies of people of the same age with different weights would have been the way to go. This was not only banking on fatphobic beliefs, but also instilling fear of fat in viewers. They also followed a woman who was part of a study that had its participants eat an extra 1,000 calories a day at fast food restaurants. Other than the fact that they are showing someone drastically changing their behaviors, the adverse health effects of the extra calories is completely blamed on the small amount of weight that was gained. This is only a few examples of the film that's showing an unrealistic approach from science to try and prove that gaining weight, not changing behaviors, is related to a change in health status. 4. Promotion of harmful weight control measures. During part 2 of the film, follow 2 women who are part of the weight control registry that keeps track of people who have kept off their weight long term, which the registry defines as 1 year. What they showed was obsessive calorie counting, keeping food journals, and excessive exercise. Watching the women explaining the obsessive behaviors that they have mastered control of their weights was one of the hardest things to watch about the film. They also promoted weight loss surgery as an option. The man that they had followed to his surgery and then did a follow-up after only 6 months had many of the life-threatening complications that happen with bariatric surgery, but they were played down by his affirmation that he would have done it again. 5. The fatpocalypse is coming. All of the films had commentary that made it seem as though the world was going to end if we didn't stop this epidemic. One commentator said that the U.S. would be crushed by it. Another said that businesses would go overseas to find a workforce, because clearly fat people are only in the U.S. That we won't have a workforce in the U.S. because everyone will be so fat, and that our healthcare costs will continue to grow until Armageddon happens. They also mentioned the overused and misplaced study that said this generation's children would not live to the same age as their parents. 6. Risks. The documentary kept talking about risks associated with obesity, but doesn't explain that risk does not mean cause. The confusion between correlation and causation and understanding study results is astounding when research is written about in the media. 7. Fake compassion. The film was very conflicted with its point of view on how we should feel about fat people. Not only did they say that we should know that people are fat outside of their own control, but many of the fat people who were interviewed said that it was their own fault or that they could change their body if they tried. The idea that they want us to see fat people as helpless while also giving choices on how fat people can lose weight is asinine. They are trying to appear to be compassionate and create less fat stigma when that is exactly what they are doing. 8. Structural changes. There is a lot of time dedicated to the prevalence of poverty and body size in the films, how in low-income areas there are no outdoor spaces for people to move their bodies, that they are often located in fresh food deserts, which is a lie, and how junk food is the most affordable food available. All of this creates the idea that they don't want to place the blame on people living in those areas while also presenting misleading information. The top suggestions given were creating safe outdoor spaces and access to affordable fresh foods. They also tried to tackle the prevalence of fast food restaurants in low-income areas, but didn't mention a recent study that showed middle-income people eat fast food more than people who live in poverty. The food industry, number 9. While talking about the amount of junk food in stores, they also try to engage the food industry, referring to it as something similar to the smoking industry. Many suggestions of reforming the food industry are not sustainable for the population of our countries. Organic fresh foods, grass-fed beef, etc., would not be possible with the amount of land we have and the population of people we need to feed. As it is, we have people that starve every day, stores like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods throwing out blemished foods because they don't look good enough for their shelves. One commentator even made the suggestion that they should be required to make less food each year so that people would be forced to eat fewer categories. All of these suggestions mean something completely more sinister than just trying to make people thin, because if this were to actually happen, people would die. We would need a smaller population for these suggestions to actually work, and they would be created by the lack of food available for the current population. Also, none of the suggestions given would actually make the population as a whole thinner or make it so that fat people didn't exist. 10. Conflict of interest. Many of the contributors in their film, as well as the National Institute of Health, the Institute of Medicine, and the Center for Disease Control, all sponsors of the documentary, have possible conflicts of interest with people in their organizations who get money from companies that bank on fat bodies being pathologized. The NIH specifically had a panel that was recently called out for having conflicts of interest with the makers of Lapband. A few of the contributors of the documentary have been on this panel, and every person who spoke in the film has a job that depends on fat bodies being considered diseased. Final thoughts. While the documentary banks on the normal ignorance surrounding weight and health, I found the worst parts to be the way they use scare tactics and misleading information. The length of the documentary was almost excruciating to sit through, aside from the information being presented. They probably could have cut the time in half if they didn't repeat half of the information numerous times and what I am assuming they hope will make people remember everything that they talked about. One of the short films titled Stigma, The Human Cost of Obesity, talks about weight stigma. But even in that portion, the stigma is completely blamed on the weight of the person, as you can see with the title of the clip, not on the society or fat phobia. In the clip, Rebecca Puhl says how we need to not make this a fight against fat people, but against obesity. The problem is that when you live in a fat body, that science doesn't know how to make thin people, you really are waging a war against people. End quote. Spotlight today is a piece from the Health at Every Size blog. The piece was written by Deb Bergarg and is entitled The Haas Files, Stereotype Management Skills for HBO Viewers. Quote, I don't know what HBO series The Weight of the Nation is going to say, but if the previews are representative, you might want to use this handy viewer's guide to conserving sanity points. Critical Thinking Skills 101. The main flaw in the traditional view is to think that if an event happens in the life of fat people, it is because they are fat. All of us are trained to think this way, but there are some questions to ask that can help reverse the brainwashing. Does this happen to thin people too? I eat too much. My doctor tells me I have diabetes. That person I was attracted to rejected me. I can't get down on the floor and play with my grandchildren. Fat is blamed for almost anything negative that happens in life. But thin people don't have their fatness to blame. So when those same things happen to them, they have a whole universe of possible solutions. Those same solutions should also be available to fat people. Why would we think the only solution is to turn them into thin people? There is a version of blaming fat where the very presence of fat people in society is enough to blame them for the society's problem. The question to ask here is, if everyone was thin, would we still have this social problem? There are problems with the way we produce food and inequities in how we distribute it. We are living in an environmentally unsustainable way. We don't have a functional healthcare system. The baby boomers are a big demographic group who are living longer and will cost more in their final stage of life. Our schools are struggling to feed, educate, and exercise our children with too few resources. And the demands of making a living leave little time for caring for ourselves and each other. Blaming fatness keeps us from addressing the root causes of our problems and is clearly unfair to fat people. Many powerful people understand this but find it expedient to frame a problem in terms of fat in order to bring attention to it. They don't think people will just attend to the real issue unless they whip up about the fat panic. Whether it is being pessimistic that people will exercise if it is not in the context of a weight loss effort, or being pessimistic that people will care about our food environment if it is not in the context of a moral panic about fatness, the justification for whipping up the fat hatred is the same. I say, have the courage to make your argument about the real issues and stop doing it on the backs of fat people. Arm yourself with the facts. Here are some other key facts to keep in mind while you are watching. The epidemic refers to a rise of 10 to 15 pounds in the average weight of U.S. adults between 1980 and 1999. The rise was over before most of the obesity epidemic rhetoric even began. The pictures illustrating two-thirds of U.S. adults are overweight or obese are almost universally of people who represent less than 1% of the population. People at the BMI over 50 are so rare that the CDC cannot estimate their actual prevalence in the population. The photo that would actually represent the headline would be someone the size of Will Smith or Tom Cruise. We can recast public health authorities' notion that we are in denial about our fat as their complaint that we are not buying into the BMI categories, which is actually a triumph of common sense, since BMI is such a lousy proxy for health, appearance, and even degree of actual fatness. There is a fog of confusion around BMI. Supposedly educated people seem to think that squaring, dividing, and converting to metric units adds more information than the height and weight data you started with. The range of weights considered problematic in children was tripled in 2007 for no scientific reason, from the 95th percentile and up to the 85th percentile and up. This allows for dramatic statements like, 1 in 3 children in Georgia are overweight or obese, even though pediatricians agree that even the 95th percentile and higher does not necessarily signify ill health. Despite the alarm, type 2 diabetes in children is so rare that the CDC has not been able to accurately estimate prevalence. We need to focus on the lack of access to good medical care for many of these children and their families, rather than using them as poster children for public health hate campaigns. Challenging the untested assumption. The entire health argument for weight loss is based on a single untested assumption. A weight-suppressed fat person has the medical risk profile of a thin person. Think about it. There are no data for this because there are so few weight-suppressed fat people who maintain weight suppression long enough to find out. Instead, we have the illusion from medical data 6 months or a year into weight loss, which reverses with weight gain, that temporarily shows improved risk factors like low cholesterol or better fasting glucose levels. If research was required to be at least 2 to 5 years in length, we would lose our illusion that weight loss is a solution because neither weight loss nor health benefits last. Fortunately, we have a more reliable way to obtain those improved medical outcomes for people who lose no weight but increase their movement levels or nutritional quality, and the physiological improvements last with the ongoing practices. And if fat tissue loss was the key solution, why do we see no medical improvements with liposuction? Follow the money. When you are evaluating the claims made in the series, remember to follow the money. Historically, every time the public appears to be getting hip to the fact that diets don't work, there are massive responses from the weight cycling industry. Their target this year is clearly communities of color and men, and their campaigns seek to shame people who are in denial about their weight. One can picture the marketing execs around the table. We got white women to hate their bodies, but we saturated that market long ago. Big Pharma is constantly trying to create new markets, so making people who are not sick need treatment for pre-diabetes and pre-hypertension is a great moneymaker. The health insurance industry has always gotten away with discriminating against fat people and will politically get away with flouting the new healthcare law, should it survive, by charging higher premiums for the two-thirds of the country who are overweight. My own profession of psychology is seeking to enshrine the current ineffective weight change interventions to make ourselves the weight loss experts who get the Medicare reimbursements. All of these interests stand to lose billions of dollars if they tell the truth. So remember, people are getting paid to hate you. Stereotype and stigma management skills. Critical thinking skills are all well and good, but there is another difficult aspect of public hate campaigns, which is, of course, these are real people being obnoxious and mean to us. We can be armed with all the facts in the world, but the social reality is that it really sucks being the target of hate and bullying. When people are mean, we have to be especially careful not to blame our bodies. There is nothing about us or our bodies that deserves scorn or derision. Take special care to honor your body and its wondrous capacities and gift. The problem lies outside of you and your body, with the bullies and the forces that benefit from hatred. One of the most important things we can do when we are experiencing discrimination is to seek out our tribe. This is the time to talk about what you're experiencing, in person or on the listservs. Also, ASDAH is preparing materials designed to help viewers understand and critique the rhetoric of the Weight of the Nation documentary. It looks like the Weight of the Nation plans to hit all the major obesity memes, like this generation of children's parents' lifespans will be shorter than their parents, obesity will bankrupt our healthcare system, and by 2050, our entire country will be obese. We could not have a better opportunity to plan big parties and play fat hate bingo. HBI says we have to lose to win, but we say all you have to lose is your hate. End quote. Closing the show is Gossip with Dime Store Diamond.
Everybody knows the things she does to please. Low cut sweaters with her skirts above her knees. She's a